Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. Today I'm joined by Nicholas Yanni, who is the founder of Matrix Development, and we're going to be talking about returning from exile and living in presence, which is an online program that Nicholas is leading. And we'll talk about why Nicholas created this program in the context of the collective journey that we feel we're being invited to make in our times, this journeying from living within a small bandwidth of our experience inside of our rational minds and moving into a greater sense of embodiment, coherence, and integration, where we access different capacities in ourselves. So we'll talk about what are some of the key principles and ways we can be with our experience that allow us to make that journey and return from exile. And how, and specifically, does Nicholas support his clients to do so? We'll talk about some of the capacities like intuition that come online as we make that journey and why that's important in leadership. And we'll talk about prayer and God and how that has impacted Nicholas's life and my life. It's a very touching conversation. So I hope you enjoy this. Nicholas Yanni, as I've said, is the founder of Matrix Development. He works with CEOs and senior teams globally. He also teaches at two of the world's leading business schools and pioneering a new vision and practice of leadership. His book, Leader of Healer, A New Paradigm for 21st Century Leadership, was published to wide acclaim in 2022 and is winner of the Business Book of the Year 2023 award. All right, let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Nicholas Yanni. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. So dearest Nicholas, yeah, here we are again. And let me check how you're doing, first of all.
Well, it's always an honor and a joy to be with you, Joel. I'm doing really well. I've just been on an intensive retreat with one of my great teachers, Patrick Connor. And it was deep. And straight after that, I gave a webinar for a group of senior leaders in New Zealand and Australia early yesterday morning. And it was wow, what was coming through. So yeah, I'm good. I'm excited actually more than ever for this work that you and I do and this time in the world and what's showing up. Thank you.
Yeah, if we're going to talk about Returning from Exile, which is a program you're running, and why that program exists in our conversation, and you know, is it just feels like more than ever, the times we find ourselves are a very potent invitation, really, for us to examine who we see ourselves to be and what it is to be human in our world. Could you speak into how you see these times and how that led to the creation of Returning from Exile? And what that title, you know, is very evocative, Returning from Exile, Living in Presence. So yes, maybe you could weave in the title as well.
Thank you. So in many ways, I would say that the themes we've talked about before live in me just more and more vividly and more clearly and more kind of bigly, if that's a word, in a bigger and bigger way. So I see this as a time of really profound awakening for many people. It's almost as if humanity is kind of in two camps at the moment. There's the camp of the so-called normal, which, as I've often spoken about, is a very, very limited way of being in the world and seeing the world. And in leadership, which is one of my big domains, it cannot possibly lead to the kind of insights and fields of intelligence that are needed now. I mean, that's clearer to me than ever. And the reason for that is that it's totally dominated by thinking and the desire to know everything through the mind and control everything through the mind. One of my great teachers uses the image of we're living in a kind of 20-room mansion, but actually we're only living in the lobby and not even realizing that there is this mansion inside us. And I think that's a very good metaphor. And that for me is a state of exile. And I know it's a strong word. I've used it for a year or two, and it always has it speaks deeply to people. Because I think we have created a way of living and a culture that really is truly in exile. And exile means far, far away from our deep self, from our deep level of connectedness to each other, to life, to our hearts. And really the opposite of presence. You know, I used to say often we live in a culture of absence, so it's the same thing. And exile is a big archetype, and I find it very powerful as it sits in me as well. So I decided to call the program Returning from Exile, Living in Presence. And it's actually the first time for quite some time that I've offered a program that is really for everybody. So it includes leaders and it includes coaches. And it's also for anyone in any domain of life who wants to live in more presence, which fundamentally means a much deeper level of connectedness, first of all, to self, to the body, to the heart, to the intuition, to the transcendent realm, all of the things that have gone so much offline when we are in exile and just in our thinking mind. So, and of course, as we do that inner work, then our whole relationship to whatever we're doing in life radically changes. And we become ones who, in whatever situation we're in a state of greater presence, much more open. And I've always called presence, I'm here and I'm available. But that's a profound, it sounds simple, but it has a huge meaning that I'm here, meaning I'm in my body. I'm breathing. I feel connected to my body. My heart is open. That's a big, big thing. Speaking from my own experience, it's a lifelong journey of my heart becoming more and more open and therefore more and more full of love. My intuition, which is this extraordinary faculty of knowing, just knowing, is totally different from knowledge. And then the connection to the more transcendent realm, which also in my experience gets deeper and deeper and deeper. Like a realm that is really kind of an ultimate void almost, which all the traditions speak of this. And what I've also found very powerful, I recently was researching the prophecies of different wisdom traditions, the Native American tradition, the Kabbalistic tradition, the yogic tradition. And they all speak with one voice. They saw what would be happening now. It's kind of remarkable and deeply affirming. I mean, the language they use is incredible about what would be happening now, the chaos and the leadership and the greed and the disconnection. But they also all say this is a pivotal time for humanity. Because I don't believe we're going to save ourselves from some very unpleasant times. I do strongly believe that something new is birthing. I feel it birthing in myself and the people I live with, work with. It's not that there's hope, it's that that is happening. And that's what they all spoke about. We don't know how it will play out. We can't possibly know, but we know that there is a great awakening happening. And I feel more and more aligned with that. It's in my deeper and deeper experience. And that awakening means living in presence also means that I live in a vastly bigger perceptual field. So, and this is, of course, so what I teach in my coaching as well, and that's a 6-month program, which is really when I sit with you or when I sit with a client, I completely feel you. And that's not a metaphor, it's literal. So cognitive thinking is really just a servant of that, because the main thing that's happening is I'm feeling you, and then we see what happens within that relational space. Sometimes I'm feeling you more than you feel yourself, even. And all transformational coaching for me begins with and ends with almost we help the client become more one with whatever is happening unconditionally. Everything is welcomed. If you're feeling hopeless, if you're feeling devastated, you're feeling lost, let's not in any way oppose that. Let me create a warm enough heart space in which I will love you in every part of your experience. So living in presence has all of those implications for me. It's the frequency we're radiating towards everything in our life, and we're all works in progress. I mean, I just had an experience, my wife and I had an experience coming back from the retreat of complete chaos travel. We missed the connection. It was chaos trying to get a hotel. It was chaos trying to find how to get to the hotel. And we were astonished to find we were smiling through all of this. That's not so normal for us. We could have easily been seriously irritated and angry with the whole way this was being dealt with. So I think that's very important for all of us to move in that direction, that we're not so bothered by external events, that we're working more because of our inner work to move into a vibration that is one of love. So in that respect, I really do subscribe to the idea that there is nothing happening out there objectively. There are events out there, but our reality is how we are experiencing those events. And that depends entirely on our frequency. And our frequency depends entirely on our inner work, how much we're turning towards all those emotional parts that have gone offline. We know that. And how much we're also in meditative practice, and the two go together. So returning from exile will be a beautiful in-depth program. I've just finished the 6-month coaching program, which really was transformational. And I believe returning from exile, living in presence, will be the same, only that it's for people in all walks of life to become like a stiller point inside. Also, as the chaos grows, how do I find a way of not relying on anything outside for my own sense of center, my own sense of presence, so that I then move through the chaos with a vibration that is far beyond the chaos. That's some of the aspiration of the program. And I know from these online programs, we create incredible group of people, whether it's 20, 30, 50 people, and the community of people walking together also becomes very powerful. And we offer a lot of support and different ways of interacting. Obviously a lot with me, but also with people in my team and one-to-one sessions as well. So it's really a rich journey.
It seems like with the advent of AI and the deluge of ways we can be online and consume information, that is kind of feeding a certain aspect of us, which is very rational and gets caught in wanting to know and understand the world. And I think many people are feeling the call to something different, which I think you're articulating, you know, that there's a kind of end game in that path where it doesn't lead to greater well-being or happiness, or isn't able necessarily to kind of navigate the complexity and uncertainty of our times. Could you say a little bit about this journey of returning from exile? You've actually named, I think, some key parts to that, but what is that path? Like, what are you inviting people to do?
Beautiful. Thank you, Joel. And just to say about AI, it's interesting how big it is and how concerned we are about it, probably with good reason. But to me, it's very simply about how we use it. I mean, I use AI and it's an amazing tool. I ask for research, for instance, about the traditions, what they say about these times. It gave me a fantastic document about that. Wow, thank you. Thank you. What an amazing tool to have. But of course, if it feeds our rational mind, that's where problems start. So in a way, that fits perfectly with what you asked me, because for me, there are different dimensions of the, I call it coming home. Living in presence is like coming home. So one foundation is our physical body. And I think we don't realize the extent to which we're disembodied. And that starts very, very early on. It's clearer and clearer to me. You know, it starts from the first moment, even very early in life, where the environment shocked us in some way. And what happens in that moment is we lift away from our base. And our base is the pelvis or the root chakra, but literally the pelvis. And we lift, and we come up and up and up, and our body gets more and more tense in a way. And then we go to the gym, and we do stuff to the body. So the body becomes this object. And I'm speaking of a lifelong journey of coming home to the body, of living in the body as a kind of profound inner location, how I experience whatever I is, being embodied as a core part of that. So moment to moment to moment, my experience of life is through the body. So I'm feeling life through the body, because the body is an unbelievable instrument of perception, which we've largely forgotten. Indigenous tribes, of course, live in that way. You read about how they hunt. They're one with nature. They're one with the animal, with reverence, because they're so in their body. And that includes our wildness. It includes our sensuality. So much energy that we locked away and shamed often in many ways. So returning to the body is a profound part of returning from exile. You know, when I work with leaders, I often ask them, can you remember how it feels when your body is fully alive and you feel really good in your body? And you almost all say, yeah, I do know how that feels. And then I say, well, what percentage of each day do you live with that feeling? And it's like heads go down. And it's somewhere between 5 and 10%. And then I'm like, but do you realize what we've normalized? Do you realize what we've normalized? So 90% of each day, you're not in touch with that energy of the body. And that's considered normal. That's part of the kind of disaster we're in. So coming home to the body is foundational. And then, of course, big, big, big work is opening the emotional body and making it safe enough to welcome all our emotions, all of our emotions, unconditionally, to stop thinking about positive and negative emotion, to really understand that the degree to which we can feel something like joy is completely commensurate with how much I can feel sad, frightened, angry. So the whole joy project without these is a non-starter. So the opening the emotional body is making it safe enough for each of us in our own way to allow ourselves to feel these emotions that we long ago, for good reason, put away because we didn't have the support to feel them. But an adult group working together makes that space, and it's one of the most, I was going to say, delicious and profound parts of any developmental program, where then we find that our vulnerability, when our heart is touched, becomes one of the biggest gateways to feeling at home in life and feeling at home with each other. Because if we share vulnerability together, it's really heart opening. And I always remember I think it's a Sufi statement, which says, the longest road you will ever walk is the road from your head to your heart. And I think that's an amazing sentence. So the heart opening is a big part.
You said just then, for good reason, that we disconnected from our bodies and our emotional experience. And so could you say something about honoring that in any journey of connecting back to body, the body and emotions, and that, you know, we don't want to just necessarily push through and impose a standard. How can we hold that?
We hold that, first of all, with zero judgment, with an absolute honoring of the fact that not only did we need to do that, we did it very well. So there's a real honoring and welcoming of that. And at the same time, seeing the consequence for us, and therefore saying, yes, I do want to unnumb myself. I do want to become more and more feeling, because that's the real richness of life. That not with any kind of making wrong that I did that. Far from it. And we never push, by the way. It's always a welcoming. It's a welcoming of whatever is true. I was doing this New Zealand webinar I did yesterday was senior leaders and coaches, and one woman came on. There was online and in person, which was lovely. But one woman online who does IFS, which you know very well. And she said, yeah, but you know, the thing is, Nicholas, there are parts of us that want to be seen. And then there are parts that really don't want to be seen. And I said, yeah, so we welcome them all. We absolutely welcome with our heart. I get that there's a part of you that doesn't want to be seen. Let's really welcome that. And then when we have enough presence together, maybe it becomes possible to start to feel what that sits on, like the shame. And maybe it doesn't, but the very fact of welcoming it all absolutely unconditionally and with a lot of love is always the direction. We're never trying to push anywhere at all. We're trying to be with what's really true. For me, that's the most fundamental principle of transformational coaching. And the one that is, it's the most profoundly simple and often the last to really happen, because we're so into where we have to get to, rather than, you know, can we be fully here? And can we make space for everything that's arising inside? Because then we become one. We want to live in union. So we have to gradually find the way of not having any opposition to anything inside us, including not having an opposition to, I don't want to show that part. Yeah, well, let's really accept that. Then you become more one. I become intimate with you in that. I don't need you to change that. Anything we try to change actually paradoxically creates polarization.
Yeah.
And we're walking out into the world wanting to be a force of harmony and light, but we've got this polarization inside ourselves. So we're transmitting into the world polarization, not unity.
So I'm hearing, in a sense, there's a principle of meeting whatever is arising in our experience, and that actually there's a kind of, what is it in you that's meeting that thing that's arising, the emotion, the sensation? Let me, if I just share a little bit more, like you said, you mentioned IFS. That I think what's why, partly why IFS has taken the world by storm, is that they have this notion of accessing presence or self, and then being able to meet parts from that place. And I'm wondering for you if that's resonant with, I kind of hear that in your approach too, is that you're, you know, there's a container within which, you know, emotions, sensations are welcomed.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would basically very much resonate with that. I might not formulate it quite as, in quite such a structured way, but it feels to me very, very beautiful that something is happening between us. There's you. The most important thing is that we create the possibility that you, let's say, are a liberated momentarily from your thinking mind and your desire to control and know everything in your mind. So implicitly, we move into, I would call it a deeper location inside, which has a lot about noticing, really noticing, not with my thinking, but with my attention. I notice this is happening in my body. I notice this kind of feeling, wow, I feel a bit lost. And I don't try and analyze it, because most people, as soon as they feel a bit lost, want to start explaining it, which takes us away. I mean, it's another big part of my work, which will be part of the program as well, which is a whole kind of teaching about how do we speak in a way that our language matches our energy. Because I observe so much of the time there's something happening here, and then I speak from out here. And then other people respond from out here because they think this is meaningful. It's fascinating. And then we dialogue in a kind of field that is primarily conceptual and abstract. And meanwhile, there's a lot happening here that just doesn't get touched.
In the body and the, I'm just for people listening.
So-called body and the emotional body. So I had a beautiful example of this again yesterday, because it was a mixture of coaches and consultants and leaders. And one woman online came and asked me a perfectly reasonable question about this whole process of selling yourself, and she wasn't comfortable with it, and what you have to say about that. So this was a beautiful example, because I said to her, on the one hand, I hear your question, but I'm more interested in how I feel you. Because I could have dialogued with her about that question, but it would have been a bit abstract. Because what I then shared very lovingly was I said, my sense of you is that this takes you to your inner kind of territory of wanting to hide a bit and maybe feeling some shame about really showing up. And if you really will work with that a bit and feel that, I don't think you'll have the same questions anymore. That for me is a kind of pivot point, because it would have been easy to start giving some ideas about the question, but we would have missed what was really the issue. And I think we have to learn to stop this abstract dialogue, except, not as a kind of militant thing, but to notice when we're doing that and to help each other come back to speaking from my experience. And this is in all domains of life, social and personal and professional, all domains of life. And I hear that happening more and more, people having more and more, let's call it real conversations. I hear senior leaders, for instance, becoming far more ready to say things like, you know what, I feel really lonely. That's how I really feel inside. That's amazing. A year ago it might have been, well, I'm okay, but there are a lot of stuff to deal with. And yeah, we know that, but what's really happening inside you? Because the moment someone speaks from their intimate experience, we're in a quite different territory. And that for me also is how a much higher intelligence arises, because higher intelligence arises from coherence. And that would be another way of describing exile. It's incoherent. It's like when we were children and we felt the energy in the family field, but the dialogue of the parents was saying something totally different. It was not acknowledging the tension in the family. So from the word go, we're like, what's going on here? This is very confusing. And then we need to try and fit in with that dialogue that's actually not coherent. So that's already where our core essence starts to get compromised in some way. We lose touch with our real perception, which is that there's something happening here that's not being spoken about. But by the time we've fitted in, we already often lost that deeper sense of what we know is true. So returning from exile is also a restoration of how we communicate with each other. And that's a beautiful part of an online program such as this. That brings presence when people speak to each other from a real communication of what they're experiencing and not overanalyzing everything.
I do want to ask you about what comes online when we bring more coherence and presence. But first, I just want to name something here, which I think is important, which maybe is like a paradoxical move that's being invited to a lot of people who are leading right now in their lives. You name that example of people saying, like, I feel lonely, because I think we've coming out of a world where the dominant kind of paradigm was, leaders have it all together. Leaders are clear. Leaders are accessing their power. Leaders know what to do. And You know, I think our childhoods also condition us in that process, and it seems, yet paradoxically, that's actually what will keep us, you know, stuck and unable to move into this journey of coherence. So could you say something about that journey of the importance of beginning to name those things we haven't named inside of us? I know, in a sense, our whole conversation has been about the importance of that, but maybe you could speak to it from this perspective I'm bringing right now.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I've long spoken against the need for leaders to have it all together. And I've also for a while been talking about that we are in a pandemic of loneliness and isolation, and not just in leadership. I think many, many people deep inside feel lonely and isolated, because when our heart is closed down, that is how we feel deep inside. And then we will do many things to try not to feel that. And it's powerful to see that once our heart starts to open, and then we look at all the kinds of strategies we use, and I speak very much for myself, to avoid feeling the loneliness. So my experience is that whenever we can speak in a real way, a completely new territory opens. And it's a territory ultimately of joy, because connection with each other is joyful and deeply touching and deeply inherently meaningful. And also my experience is that that is often the doorway to all kinds of inspiration. We suddenly have new ideas about everything, because energy is moving through our system in a new way. So whether you're in a leadership role or a coaching role or a nurse or a doctor or a lawyer or whatever, I think this ability to be more real is of fundamental importance. Yeah.
I mean, we can feel it, can't we, in people immediately when there's that realness there, you know, and it touches people, it's palpable. It's that move where, you know, I remember, I mean, just a story comes to me now, but there was this famous radio DJ in America who was suffering, you know, he had an addiction to something, and he was, you know, his life was falling apart, and he kept it all in secret. And then one day on his show, he just decided to, I don't know where the inspiration came from, but he just decided to completely reveal everything on air. And what happened was that he went massive, you know, and it, like, his career took off in a way that was extraordinary, because people were touched by that. You know, they didn't reject him for his honesty. They actually loved him for it, and it opened up a whole new life for him. One of great healing as well, incidentally.
No, I think that's amazing and very archetypal in a way, very universal. It reminds me, a long time ago, I had the privilege of working with the permanent secretaries in England, top of the civil service. And one of them was talking in the group. He said, you know, recently I went on TV, I was interviewed on TV, and I said, look, I'm losing sleep at the moment, and this is the most difficult thing I've ever done. And then afterwards he thought, oh God, maybe I shouldn't have said that. And then he said, but the next day when I went into the department, so many people came up to me and said, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And it was like, wow, it's kind of a little version of what you're saying there. Exile is disconnection. Exile is this bubble of isolation we live in, where we somehow think, I have to have it all together, and I have to hide all my vulnerability, all my fear. And if someone asks me, how are you? I say, I'm fine, all is fine. And that's exile. That's true exile from everything, not just on a personal level. It's also exile from the transcendent. It's exile from an intimacy with life, with the intelligence of life, because that's our heart opens as we become more embodied. We feel more alive in ourself. We feel more connected with other people. Even if they don't reciprocate, it doesn't matter anymore. We feel more connected with people. And then we also feel more connected with something that's even more difficult to name, whether you call it the Tao, whether you call it the creation of life, whether you call it God, whether you call it, I've also been researching all the names every culture has given for this much more core principle of life, core energy of life. So returning from exile is becoming intimate with everything, everything, all the dimensions of life. And part of that sometimes is, and it's a real edge for me, is to feel, you see, I think most of us, and I include myself, have lived a long time with a very, very core feeling that I'm not really supported by life itself. And I started noticing that in clients about a couple of months ago. It was fascinating. It was like a new door opened in my perception. And I started to see such a deep level of holding in people, like holding themselves, like almost bracing themselves, like deep in their body. I started to see this in a new way and then look at it in myself as well. And it took me into this kind of new understanding that and it goes right back to, it's very primal. You know, let's say we weren't really held enough physically as a child, you know, and I've spent a long time in Africa. And one of the things you see there is babies are always strapped to their mothers. And here we put them in babies in prams. So what's happening from a very, very early age on a very, right deep in our nervous system, we're not literally feeling held. And I see more and more that translates into much deeper sense that life itself is not holding me. And that's a profound kind of metaphysical reality when I'm living in that. And I think 95% of us or more, deep down, if we look, that's a very core topic. And then we do so much to kind of not feel that, to try and feel held. It's become a very deep topic in my work. So again, returning from exile, living in presence, is moving much more, ultimately into a deeper and deeper ease. A real fundamental ease with life and with each other. I think that's one of the deepest journeys of all for all of us. And then we may also feel more at ease with something more transcendent. You know, God has a, it's very difficult to talk about God for me anyway, because of all the associations. But we can use whatever language we want to speak about a sense of the oneness of life, the wonder of life, and how much we're divorced from that. We walk around every day. Even the body is a miracle. The body is a walking miracle, second by second. And we so take it for granted. We're so far a lot of the time from wonder, like the pure wonder of life. This too is all part of coming out of exile.
I think I'm guessing a lot of people listening to this will really resonate with that. I know in my own life, I've also contacted that sense of a kind of vigilance,
right?
Life, you know,
right.
It's like a subtle sense of, you know, sometimes it's loud, but often it's kind of subtle in the background. It's like
alert,
be alert, be in control,
beautiful, yeah.
Keep things. You know, keep things on track, because if you don't, they'll all fall apart and
exactly
be screwed. And it's
wow,
been quite painful for me, because it's like a lot of other stuff was covering it over, you know, and
sure.
And then that gets integrated, and then it just, this thing starts to show up, and it's it has a kind of pain inside of it, a frequency of fear and like a sore muscle or something, like that's constantly in use. And it's kind of sad to, I mean, it's very touching in a way to recognize that that's there and permeating experience. I think it's a really incredible invitation you're making that we can include that as well. And actually, that it's almost again this paradoxical move that all the ways we've been trying to avoid feeling our discomfort, to protect ourselves, to numb ourselves, to cope, they were strategies that had an intelligence, but actually they've actually perpetuated that experience. And by actually turning towards our experience in the way you've been describing, there's this kind of restoration and integration, which can then bring forth a greater sense of ease. And could you say something about what you see opening up in people as they mature in this journey? And even at the beginning of our call, you said something's waking up in me. And I was like, oh, I wonder what that is. And could you say a little bit more about, what capacities do come online as we return from exile?
Let's just go back for a moment, because you always say so many rich things, and I want to just reaffirm how beautifully and precisely you talked about that very core level, because we don't, it's so normalized that we don't realize it until we realize it's there. And it is like a kind of pain. It's a very physiologically embedded alertness. And I think it goes right to the very core of our identity often. So being able to name it the way you do is of invaluable importance. And then to feel it together, not to make it wrong in any way, not to try and get rid of it. Because the only way it changes is let's really feel that together with kind of curiosity. Wow, yeah, I can notice that in myself. It's very subtle, but it's so deep, embedded in my nervous system. And if we can feel it together, then something starts to melt. That's always true. That's basically how things work. And we meet it with a lot of curiosity and love. Like, I love that part of you, and you love that part of me, even if I can't love it myself. And that's how real, in my experience, that's how real transformation occurs. And I want to just say before I come to the question you asked, that I speak more and more about how there is a big difference between what I call the wellness project and the transformational development project. And again, I used AI to check the other day. The wellness industry is worth about $7 trillion. Wow. It's one of the biggest growing industries. And of course, there's a lot that's really good about that. It's helping millions of people lead a better life in many ways. And of course, part of the data was about how it's helping organizations as well be more profitable. And all of that being as it is, I think it's important to see that for a number of people, there will come a point, or there always was a point, and it may be because that stops working, or it may be because there's a crisis. And then we understand that the core of the wellness project, as I see it, is helping I or me feel better. And that goes quite a long way for sure. But it's not the same as the transformation project, where I understand that to be in my highest potential, I have to meet and include every part of me, just as you so beautifully said. That's a very different project. And that means at times I'll be uncomfortable because I'll be meeting part of me that I, as we've said, I've had to spend a long time not feeling. And it can be very simple, even just to be able to say, no, do you know what? I feel anxious right now. For a lot of us, that's already a huge step. Because we're so living in a culture where it's not okay to say that, or it's not okay to be sad, or as soon as I feel sad, I want to explain it to you. So it's very clear to me, and the program Returning from Exile, Living in Presence, is not a wellness project. It includes wellness, but it's about a deeper unfolding of who we really are in our magnificence and our radiance and our power and our wildness and our joy, which comes when all parts of us are included. So I think I just want to make that distinction. I think it's important to see that there are two tracks. And it's interesting to see that some people naturally have a more calling to the transformational, and others go through a crisis where suddenly feeling good is not working anymore. Like the house is shaking or the lobby is shaking. The lobby starts to shake. And whatever I do, however many affirmations I do or yoga classes or something is not quite working because the deeper material is coming through the cracks.
Yeah, and I mean, just to say, because that wellness agenda can be used in the way to avoid feeling the discomfort. 100%. You know, it's like, well,
absolutely.
Okay, I mean, understandably, it's like, I don't feel so great. I want to feel well. So it's just another way of escaping that experience.
So I agree with that. And I also want to acknowledge the huge benefit.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very broad category with some amazing things inside of it and maybe some less others. Yeah. Yeah.
But as one of my great teachers said recently, that he was walking around London and he noticed how many wellness centers there were, and that from his point of view, every single one was missing the most important thing, which is the divine, the transcendent, whatever we want to call it, because they're all focused on helping me feel better. I thought that was an amazing insight.
Could you say more about that for people listening? Because we've mentioned the transcendent,
yeah,
and I know we've got that question hanging around.
But we're missing the question before, because I went back to what you...
The capacities that come online.
Online, yeah.
I mean, maybe this fits, you know. Yeah,
yeah.
It fits together.
I mean, what could the main capacity that comes online is that we become far more feeling beings, and that we start to live and participate in life in a much richer way. We start to connect with ourselves and with each other in a much, much, much richer way. And we're much more inspired and ultimately much more joyful as well, and more creative and more wild sometimes. And that all the parts of us that have been shamed, and those are big, that's a big topic for almost all of us, start to melt a bit and be allowed back into the lobby, and then the doors open to the rest of the mansion, and we discover our creativity, we discover our love. Maybe if there was one single capacity that comes more online, it's love. It's really, really, really love. And there's an amazing by Martin Luther King. It's interesting to have it, but I can remember it. He talks about hate will never work against hate. Only love will work against hate. And the only way to meet the dark is with the light. And the light is love. So I think love is all the traditions have always spoken And we kind of say, yeah, well, I know that. But actually, when we really start to live more with love, and that's one of the things that is really starting to come online for me much more deeply. And it's really a game changing, actually. Yeah.
What makes it game changing for you?
Because whoever I'm meeting or whoever I'm working with, and it's far from constant, I'm not trying to be a saint, I'm a work in progress. I'm in a totally different relationship with them. And it's really one of loving them in all their everything about them without condition. Even at the airport yesterday when things were so dysfunctional, I found myself able to say to people, "You're doing such a great job, thank you," from meaning it, really meaning it, really meaning it. Instead of, "This is terrible, and how can you do this to us?" and all of that. It was a simple kind of love, but very genuine. Because it's spreading a frequency.
Yeah, so I'm hearing it's a kind of connection and a kind of inherent valuing of what one is in relationship with.
It's also a kind of blessing field. And I've thought for a long time that if I write a next book, I have the title, which is To Be a Blessing, the Highest Calling of Leadership. I don't know if I'll ever write it because I'm now in a new project with book writing that is much exciting, but it's not that. A blessing. I think that's very deep for all of us. How do we walk in the world? And I know in myself there are days when I'm contracted inside and I'm not a blessing for the people I meet. And I know more and more what it feels like to be a blessing. And how, first of all, good it feels for me, but how also people love to be in that energy field.
Yeah, that just speaks to me inherently, and there's a kind of inherent kind of sense of value. And I mean, if I think about great beings who've walked this earth,
Yes.
that's actually one of the qualities that they seem to
Yes.
inhabit, this sense of love and
Yeah.
blessing, even in the face of adversity. There's a kind of unshakable
Exactly.
presence.
And that can only arise to the degree that we ongoingly dissolve all opposition inside ourselves to parts of ourselves. Because that love is the force of unity. And any kind of inner polarization is a diminishing of that unity, that light, that flame of unity, which is why we always come back to our first priority being our own inner work, so that we walk in the world more as that frequency of love. I don't know any other way that that happens.
And can you say something about the role of God in that? Just say, I can even feel the conditioning of my upbringing, asking a question like that, because,
I know.
I think in spiritual circles, a lot of people would feel comfortable with the idea of unity.
I
The
know.
transcendent and unity and presence, that's quite they're quite comfortable perhaps with that, because it
Yeah.
doesn't threaten that sense of the solo self.
Right,
But
beautiful.
I yeah, could you say more about, because I know I feel very drawn, very, oh, my heart yearns to be in communion with something larger than myself too. It's kind of exhausted trying to do it by itself. I think that it goes back to what I was saying earlier about not feeling supported, and feeling like I have to be on guard. It's like, oh, it's just exhausting,
Yeah, and it speaks also to, it's another aspect of whether I feel held or not. So it's really a kind of leading edge for me. And I think that's also because when we threw out religion, as I've been saying for a while, I see more and more that we threw the baby out with the bathwater. And we created this secular ceiling, which we normalize now. Because the great majority of people who are not religious, for instance, just live, as you said, under a secular ceiling, where it is in the end, I'm here and I'm managing my life as best I can. So one of the ways that that has more and more become an edge for me is to really engage quite a deep prayer practice. Even when I'm not sure that I quite believe, it's almost like, to pray each day, not for some benefit. It's sometimes the prayer is even, divine presence, divine mother, teach me how to pray and show me how to feel you more. My prayers, or show me how to walk with the river of eternity. That's a very deep prayer for me. Show me how to serve your presence. Show me how to walk with more love in the world coming through me. Those are my kinds of prayers. And sometimes it's very clear to me that they are echoed. And that's very much a growing edge for me. I wouldn't say it's really in my teaching at the moment. So we're speaking about something that maybe it will become so as I settle more in that, because I do think it's one of the biggest topics of all. And it's really about how we. I had a lovely dialogue a while back with John Bovecki, who's a very, very interesting man. And he uses a lovely phrase, which is the advent of the sacred. And how do we find a new post-religious relationship with the sacred? How do we feel the sacred inherently in everything? And I think that's a really, really profound topic for all of us. And we are, in many ways, the first peoples who've lived in that kind of exile, exile from any kind of higher sense of beings. And so prayer for me has become a very central part of my life. I never would have imagined that even a year ago. Because I associated it with religion and we threw that out.
It's become a very central part of my life, and the act of praying itself is also an attunement. So I find, so there's a kind of unitive experience inside of it, that it's like in the act of prayer itself, there is an immediate attunement to the object of the prayer, like as if almost like the prayer is coming from the experience itself, and paradoxically, because if I didn't know it, if I didn't know the experience at all, I wouldn't pray for it in a sense. Like, but at the same time, that's not to diminish that there is a prayer for, Lord, please, may I tenderize my heart, and
Good. What a beautiful. Yeah, exactly.
so it's like both go together, and it's an edge for me too, so I feel very like I don't want to speak as if I really know what I'm talking about,
Me too.
but
Me too. That it's
yeah.
really an edge. And I see that is so because of this secular ceiling we were all brought up in, which was inherently has no sense of anything beyond. And I mean, certainly for me now, any work I'm doing, whether it's with a group or an individual, there's a deep prayer beforehand. Speak through me. Let me be a vessel. Let me be a vessel. This is not me running the show. And that, of course, is a huge affront to all the mental identity we've been taught to have, where I'm in control. So my prayer is more and more now, no, please, I want to, let me take the hands off the wheel, take my hands off the wheel, and let me just be an agent. And that's a really deep practice, actually, and amazing. Even with a group, like to walk in front of a group with that, I am taking my hands off the wheel. Wow. Yeah. First time I did that, it was like, do I dare to do that? And I did. And it was one of the best beginning sessions ever with a corporate group.
Yeah. Yeah. A friend of mine just wrote about his journey with public speaking. And he said he did all these trainings, tried stuff over the years, you know, and some of it helped somewhat, you know, but this core kind of fear remained. And then he just thought one time, screw it. And he prayed, you know, Lord, just, you know, help me get out the way. And then he went out and he gave the best speech ever. You know, it was like, holy right. shit, what just happened, you know?
Well, this is, you know, we're really on a profound topic here, and such a big edge, such a big threshold. So I love John Baker's statement, how can we together find a new advent of the sacred? That is not about dogma and not about belief. See, I think it's very important to say here that none of this can be about belief. Beliefs are very toxic. If your belief is different to mine and blah, 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 etc., etc., this is about a much deeper knowing, heart experience, heart connection, soul connection. And I think we're all birthing that as well. And I think that's coming in more and more. And it's a very kind of fine territory because, as you say, it's not something we can say, oh, well, I know about that now. No, no, no. It's much beyond that.
And as we move towards the end of our conversation, is there anything you want to share about returning from exile that we haven't said? Or maybe, yeah, you know, maybe what would you say to somebody considering joining the program?
I would say if you feel a calling of any kind to live your life in more presence and more connection, this may well be a journey for you, because it will be a journey and it will bring a field of ever deepening connection for each person with themselves and each person with the group participating. It will be a transformational journey and a very gentle one and a very deep one as well. And the whole thing of working online, I've become very comfortable with, and there's a beauty in people coming together from all over the world. And really being together, it's amazing the kind of sense of presence as we move beyond our thinking mind and we move into a more feeling capacity within us. It's very rich and it gets deeper and deeper, this feeling of being together and openly helping each other open into this richer participation in life. And it starts the end of June, I think 27th of June, and we still have places available. So it's on our website.
Where can people find that?
You go to thematrixdevelopment.com and then the Matrix Wisdom Academy. You'll see the program Returning from Exile.
As usual, Nicholas. Yeah, it's been a delight. Thank you.
Thank you, Joel. Really, it's very joyful and to be with you and intimate. I love how we dialogue. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is, for me, the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this. And it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches. Because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.